Good morning, Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Happened, there's been an accumulation of data, John, showing in the real world effectiveness of the vaccines. It is even better than in the clinical trials, well over 90% protecting you against disease, number one.
Yeah, and by the way, this is the question that's come up is, you know, Rochelle Walensky, the CDC are being criticized for what critics are saying is giving guidance that suddenly happens to fit a political benefit of relaxing the mask mandates. I'm just telling you, I just don't think that's the case. There have been three different studies that have come out recently that have to do with the effectiveness of the vaccines. They talked about this last week. She even said during her interview with Fox News, where she said, I wish the data had come out on Tuesday or Wednesday, so it hadn't been before I had to do the discussion in Congress. But no, it came out when it came out, and they reported and they adapted to it. And so this is Dr. Fauci rehashing the same thing, which is, number one, vaccines work with the variants, and they work very, very effectively in real-world situations as opposed to just theoretical situations. It's not that the numbers are better in the real world, it's that the numbers are more reliable. You know, every time you do a trial, there are going to be artificial elements. You do a real world survey of, you know, we've given out all these millions of doses and look, it works. Well, that's kind of the point here. Second.
Number two, a number of papers have come out in the past couple of weeks showing that the vaccine protects even against the variants that are circulating.
Again, it protects even against the variants, and so the concern that you might be vaccinated and protect you against the original strain and wouldn't work against the B117 or the South Africa strain or whatever, you know, that kind of concern is not so much of an issue. And so vaccinated people, again, you know, now that we're doing a lot more sequencing, now that we're testing especially against the variants, and it seems to be working, and then even if there is a breakthrough infection that gets past your line of defense with being vaccinated.
And thirdly, we're seeing that it is very unlikely that a vaccinated person, even if there's a breakthrough infection, would transmit it to someone else. So the accumulation of all of those scientific facts, information, and evidence brought the CDC to make that decision to say, now, when you're vaccinated, you don't need to wear a mask, not only outdoors, but you don't need to wear it indoors.
And these were the same things that they talked about during the press conference, the Zoom press conference on Thursday, on their meeting on Friday, that these three things fall in line, that even if there's a breakthrough infection, you don't tend to transmit it. Now, John Dickinson, I forget, he's the one who's filling in for her name escapes me now, too. He was there for a while, and then they brought her in, and, you know, she's on maternity leave now. Anyway, you know what's annoying? He has the same trait that Margaret Brennan. That's right. He has the same trait that she does, where they kind of want to start to interrupt their guests. He was doing it all day long with Benjamin Netanyahu. Anyway, so he's asking him about this. What is the difference? What is the difference between the asymptomatic person who's been vaccinated and the asymptomatic, somebody who's actually got it, and there are breakthrough infections with vaccinated people, okay? What's the difference between the two of them? And, you know, it's good to know this answer. There's nothing surprising in this answer, but this is why there's a difference, and why, even if somebody who's unvaccinated gets a breakthrough infection and they're not wearing a mask, why that's less risky or almost no risk at all to other people compared with the person who's asymptomatic who hasn't been vaccinated.
What the issue is that the level of virus in your nasopharynx, which is correlated with whether or not you were going to transmit it to someone else, is considerably lower. So even though there are breakthrough infections with vaccinated people, almost always the people are asymptomatic, and the level of virus is so low it makes it extremely unlikely, not impossible, but very, very low likelihood that they're going to transmit it. Whereas when people who are getting infected, who are without symptoms, who are not vaccinated, generally the titer or the level of virus, relatively speaking, is higher than in the vaccinated individuals.
Short version, when you've been vaccinated, you don't get a lot of virus in your nose, even if you've got the infection. And so you're not dangerous to other people. You're not communicating it to other people. Unvaccinated, you might be asymptomatic. It might not be affecting you at all, but you have a lot of it in your nose. And so when you breathe and cough and just general stuff, you're more likely to spread it to other people. And always just keep in mind, this is, I don't know why this has to be repeated, but it just seems that it does. The mask you wear protects other people. It does some to protect you, but the primary reason you wear a mask is to protect other people from you. And that's why the issue with the mask guidance has changed since. And also, by the way, and this is an important point, when you wear it, you've been vaccinated, and or sorry, when you don't wear it because you've been vaccinated, you are protecting the community because you're not spreading it. You're no longer a risk. The virus kind of runs into a dead end with you. Even if you get it, you don't transmit it to other people. That's why. 7:15 here on News Radio 92.3. 1620. I'm Andrew McKay. It's a Pensacola Morning News. And let's see. Who was I just looking at a second ago? We're going to be giving away some tickets to Pensacon. So definitely be listening for that. And then Saturday, June 12th from 12 to 2, the first ever Big Scoop drive-through at the Maritime Park Roundabout. Ice cream and other assorted sweets and frozen treats for each car to enjoy. The drive-through is $10 for cars, big and per car. Big and little get in free with proof of their magic card. All proceeds benefit Big Sisters and Big Brothers, Big Brothers and Big Sisters of Northwest Florida.
Space, the final frontier.
Oh, I love it. Oh, this is so happy. Such a short-lived show, by the way. Enterprise. All right, so here's the thing. I got two weekend passes for Pensacon. Two weekend passes for Pensacon. Comes up this weekend, you know, 5 days, 4 days from now. So here's how you win. What are red shirt-wearing characters famous for in Star Trek? 437-1620, 437-1620. What are red shirt characters famous for in Star Trek? 437-1620, 437-1620. First correct answer wins a pair of passes to Pensacon. Mark Jacobs going crazy. You want to play? I know you do, Mark. But
that's too easy.
I know it is.
Yeah, okay.
I was trying to come up with a little bit different flavor of that question. And I couldn't come up with one that worked real, had a very clear answer. So that's the one I'm going with. What's going on in the newsroom, Mark?
President Biden's aides defending the CDC's guidance last week that Americans who are fully vaccinated don't need to wear masks. On the Sunday talk show, CDC Director Dr. Rochelle Walensky stressing it's still up to individuals to decide whether or not to follow the guidance. Israel says airstrikes on Gaza before dawn hit facilities belonging to Hamas and homes of several commanders. Power lines, main roads also damaged.
Diplomatic efforts are finally intensifying to produce a ceasefire between Israel and Hamas, but they are not producing results.
As NBC's Richard Engel says, the heaviest raids on Gaza since the fighting began a week ago came as those international calls for a ceasefire grow. Kobe Bryant, now a Hall of Famer, the Lakers legend, posthumously inducted over the weekend into the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame.
Very good, Mark. And by the way, I will tell you that I am getting answers flooding in. And all my Trekkies out there are like, pick me. Jonathan at 437-1620. Jonathan, for a pair of passes to Pensacon coming up this weekend, what are red shirt-wearing characters famous for in the original Star Trek series?
They are the first ones to die, and how could I get this wrong since I'm so close to the elbow room?
They are certainly expendable. In fact, it's kind of interesting, Jonathan. Let me put you on hold. Davis will get all your information here in a second. Oh, my God. I had so many people texting me on this. It's hilarious. The red shirt characters, engineering / security, and then they tended to die real fast. Like, they were always, you know, like if somebody shows up in the red, it's actually a meme, you know, the red shirt characters, kind of like, anyway. What was interesting to me, and I did not make this connection, Davis, I think red shirt wearing in college sports originated in the red shirt wearing on Star Trek as expendable extra characters.
A red shirt athlete.
Yeah, I was doing a little bit of, I could be wrong about this, but I did a little bit of research and it seemed to be that the one came before the other, which I think is amazing if it's true. That's awesome if it's true. I don't know for sure, but it seemed to be that way. So I'm going to give that 80%. Okay, I'm not certain, but I'm going to give about 80% certainly. 7:23 here on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Oh man, this Bayou Marcus spill. There's a lot of questions. this happened, of course, on Friday. You had this big spill, and it was an internal pipe, like it goes from one portion of the processing facility to another portion of the processing facility, from first stage to the next stage. And apparently, it's already undergone when it is. So this is not like just raw sewage. Okay, but it's not super clean either. It has already undergone primary screening and degridding. You don't want to think too much about what those mean, okay? I'll just tell you, it's kind of nasty, but still, primary main particle removal has happened, although not final processing. Here's what's interesting about this is it's a 30-inch diameter ductile iron pipe that they've got on the grounds there, and the facility's not that old, right? And also that there are other repairs that are going to be needed. They inspected, they did CCTV inspection, which is what they do all the time, of the 220-foot length of that pipe, and there are additional areas that warrant replacement soon. That's bad. That shouldn't be happening, right? So they're working on it. That facility, by the way, is a really interesting one. If you've never been there, the treated effluent, they've got this effluent spray system that there's a big boardwalk around that facility that it's a nature preserve. Okay. And so you can go walk on the boardwalk. It's really quite nice. It's very, very well used. It's very wide. You know, it's like, I don't know, 8 foot, 10 foot wide, something like that. You would think of it as a multi-use path width. Anyway, you can go walk on that and walk around. People get their exercise there all the time. And then it sprays down below there. The piping for the spray effluent is down below the boardwalk, and it sprays into the area. And it's a really nice thing. But, you know, obviously you got to keep that material in the pipe until it's fully ready to be sprayed out. So, yeah, this is it's not good. And then you had that advisory come out for the bayou that it was, you know, affecting it. Just weird event, I'll put it that way, until we know more about why this happened. And as I said, I think that facility is not that old. 725 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Looks like I was wrong. The red shirt term does not come from Star Trek. It originated in the, 30s is the earliest known use of it at the University of Nebraska. The red jersey that the sideline players would wear. So, bummer. I was hoping Star Trek originated. That seemed like a really cool thing. 729 here on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Oh, we got a new commanding officer at the NMRTC, Pensacola. I know it's a terrible acronym, but there it is. You would have previously called it the Naval Hospital. It still is, but it's got this overlying structure the Defense Health Agency put in place a couple of years ago. Anyway, the take from this is that thank you so much to outgoing Captain David Webster, who has gone on to 7th Fleet, or is going on to 7th Fleet to be the surgeon there. And then you've got the incoming Alan Christian. Captain Alan Christian has now taken over command. So, and by the way, sprawling command, lots of responsibility. What, 187,000 people vaccinated by them? 5 states, including Indiana, for the area of effect? Pretty amazing.
I'm Jennifer Kashinka with Your Money Now. Working long hours is killing hundreds of thousands of people a year and a worsening trend that may accelerate further due to the pandemic. Research from the World Health Organization shows 745,000 people died from stroke or heart disease associated with long working hours in 2016. That's an increase of nearly 30% from 2000. 72% of the victims were men and were middle-aged or older. A long dispute over whether former CBS chief Les Moonves gets his severance money is over, with Viacom CBS deciding he won't get it. Moonves was cut loose in 2018 after the company looked into allegations of sexual misconduct dating back 3 decades. The probe found Moonves violated CBS policy and did not cooperate in the investigation, but the fired exec appealed. Viacom CBS said in a financial filing the matter was resolved and Moonves gets nothing. On Wall Street, futures are lower. That's Your Money Now.
River Bird. Birch. That's it.
River Birch Road. Yeah, I know I've mentioned it from the dais here before, but I'm surprised that the development was allowed to happen without some kind of cost sharing on that roadway. I mean, it's a paved horse trail. I mean, the road is crowned excessively. And the only way for two vehicles to drive down that roadway, at least me in a pickup truck, and I see a construction vehicle come head on, is for me to go in the ditch. And I think that's only going to get worse with school buses, fire trucks.
So this is Commissioner Colton Wright. he's a commissioner for District 5, Gulf Breeze, Santa Rosa County. River Birch Road, if you're not familiar with it, is just on the other side, like the east side of Gulf Breeze Zoo to the north near East Bay. And it just runs up into nothing. It's just a little paved nothing, like you said, a horse trail. And the problem is they're putting developments in behind it. Lots of houses. And as always is the question, who's going to pay for the road that is okay for just a couple of people, but is absolutely inadequate for a giant development? Because at some point, that road is going to develop into problems. Hello, Tiger Point. There's a plantation road, a private road here that we drive on every day. You see this all the time. And so they're having this question of, well, who pays for that? And, the developers are kind of like, well, the county should pay for it because, you know, it's an official road, even though it's not up to that traffic. And the county's like, yeah, but you're the one who built all the houses, or you're building all the houses that's going to put the demand on it to make it stress so that we'd have to replace it earlier or upgrade it, right?
I think it's a public safety issue, and I think there should be some sort of mechanism going forward that if development is going to occur, that I think it's hard to put that on the taxpayers, the existing taxpayers and citizens, to put, 30 homes, 200 homes, whatever it may be, on a roadway like that without some type of cost sharing.
Yeah, and it's a fair question, right? Who should pay for the cost of that road? Should it be the whole county? Because the county does get a little bit of benefit in the sense that we can get into that subdivision, and in the sense that we get the benefit of the people who live there being able to access out. The primary benefit is going to be on the people who use that road. I mean, this is always a question. Who really should be paying for these roads? And of course, I mean, you have all kinds of ancillary questions about the justice of property rights. Like, why should, the person who has the more expensive property is going to pay more than the person who has a cheaper property, but they both drive the same car that puts the same stress on the road? So why is that the case? I mean, all these questions, okay? And what the County Commission in Santa Rosa is trying to do in figuring out the land development code and thinking about stuff like this is trying to figure out, who should pay for this and how should all of this work? Another issue, and this is a really interesting one, at least to me. I'm a big fan of sidewalks. I'm a big fan of being able to have the safety for the pedestrian and the bicyclist. Bike lanes I could kind of take or leave. I never feel safe on bike lanes as a bicycle user, just frankly. I always don't. Especially the ones where you have the turn lane is on the right of you as you're in the bike lane, and then like Highway 98 is on the left of you. We were in Tiger Point this weekend. So anyway, I don't love those, but all of that stuff is to the benefit. The problem is, if you're a developer, everybody says we want sidewalks. Sidewalks are expensive. Sidewalks also take space, right? And if you're a developer, you're having to figure out, well, is it worth the space? Do we lose, how much road do we have to have? Where do the utilities go? All of those kinds of questions. Sam Parker, Santa Rosa County Commissioner, District 1.
As Attorney Stewart was going to verify if parking is allowed on curb roads. And I know I gave the example of the school bus on Winterdale. Mr. Stewart, can you help us on that? And I pulled up some interesting things. You got road diets, narrower streets, going slower. The only part, and I bring up Summerdale and Winterdale, and I'm probably going on a whipping post for even asking this, but is if parking is allowed on both sides of the street, I could see where, I don't know that the 2 feet's making that much of a difference, but an issue. But it says here that you were going to verify on this, so where do we go?
I took a look at the code on the statute on that, and I could not find clear and unambiguous language in the statute that would mandate that you would have to, if you have curbing, you have to have parking.
So here's what they're trying to figure out, and this is a problem that you have all dealt with. Okay, this is why I'm bringing this to your attention. Nobody, when was the last time you heard a radio show where they talked about the land development code with road widths in your subdivision? No, but this is the stuff that makes a difference to your quality of life for years and years and years. Because, for instance, okay, if you've got roads, and we talked about where to park as a frivolous topic before, but if you've got roads that are of a certain width, then that's going to make it a discouragement to the builder to put in sidewalks. If you've got a different width, maybe they're narrower, that gives them space where they can put in the sidewalks. It's not such a big deal. But if you have narrower roads, what happens? Well, the traffic is now more of a conflict. And if you have parking on both sides, because it's not prohibited on one side, now what happens if somebody on the one side parks, somebody on the other side parks, and you can't even fit a car between them? That's a real problem that happens in places where there's not enough control of this, right? So what's the right way to do it? Well, they talked about, you know, parking on the curb. Bob Cole.
If I pull into some of these subdivisions, I usually put those wheels up on the curb just as a courtesy to keep more access, if nothing else, to maybe keep my door from getting ripped off while some idiot flies by.
Understandable, I know. But, you know, we talked about this before. Is that the right way? And then, you know, I've seen in subdivisions where they'll have like a median on the entrance. And then you've only got one lane on either side. Where do those people park if there's houses? They just park up on the sidewalk, park up on the lawn. I mean, this is what the Land Development Code is all designed to figure out. What is the right way to do this, or at least what are the right ways to do this, so that you have as few conflict points as possible when it comes to people living their lives after the subdivision is built 5, 10, 20 years later?
I know there's some statute stuff that addressed if it's on a decline or incline, steep hill, you just have your wheels turned and all, but I know that you are allowed to park on residential roadways.
Yeah,
I think you have to park with the flow of traffic. And I don't think there's prohibition about both parts. I don't know. I mean, statutes change, and I can't memorize a book. I've been out of it.
Sam Parker used to be law enforcement. And then basically what they're trying to figure out is, can we come to a requirement with the builders that will allow them, and induce, really, or even a requirement maybe, that if they do a certain road width, and they have parking only on one side, and then if they can get maybe the utilities, you know, electric and water that are going to tend to run down the side of the road, can they get those bundled together so that we can make sure that there are sidewalks and subdivisions?
And if we can get a sidewalk out of it, I got like at least half of a head nod, then I think that's fantastic, because that goes all the way back to Commissioner Rob Williamson's days, where I know he was extremely passionate about sidewalks and neighborhoods.
So where they left it all, Commissioner Colton Wright talking about a 22-foot road bed, and then what would that entail for the subdivision?
Plus 22-foot asphalt width,
whatever they are.
Yeah, plus curbing. We would be able to stack utilities.
That's putting them on both sides.
And you give us the...
stacking the utilities means putting the water and the electric on the same side, which apparently some people are not in favor of because they worry about the rupture of the water affecting the... just so you know what the issues are.
And you'd give us the sidewalks, the small sidewalks. On one side of the street, and if able to, we'll push for no parking on one side of the street.
So where they seem to land with all this is the ideal would be narrower streets, 22 foot, bundle the utilities on one side, sidewalks, and only park on one side of the street is the target that they're looking for. Now, of course, that means if you live on the wrong side of the street, people won't be able to park on your side. But that would be the trade-off for getting a sidewalk, right? You give a little bit to get a little bit. So anyway, just so you know, this is when we talk about the Land Development Code and this massive document that they've been working on for so long, what it might mean to you, this is what it means to you. Who's going to pay for the new roads? How is parking going to work? How are sidewalks going to work? You know, what are the sign requirements going to be? All of that stuff, you know, all of that. How many parking spaces do you need per square foot of an industrial warehouse? You know, that's all the stuff that they're talking about. It may seem like minutia, and it is, but it ends up affecting your quality of life in the long run, and that's why it's important to have public input on this stuff now. Stuff. 751 here on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Good morning. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Mark Jacobs is in the newsroom with our headlines. Mark?
America's UN ambassador says the U.S. is ready to help if Israel and Hamas want a ceasefire in their ongoing conflict. Speaking to a virtual meeting of the UN Security Council on Sunday, she stressed that the U.S. believes Israelis and Palestinians equally have a right to live in safety and security. Gas prices higher than they've been in nearly a decade. A gallon of regular up an average 18 cents the past month. as much as 30 cents higher in some areas impacted by last week's pipeline shutdown. And that elusive tiger that caused a scare in a Houston neighborhood, unharmed, found over the weekend. Noelle Almrud is with a Texas Animal Sanctuary and says it's a shame things got to this point.
These animals, while they are beautiful and majestic, they are wild. You cannot tame a tiger just by raising them from a baby.
Houston police say the exotic feline named India was transferred to an animal shelter before being moved to a different sanctuary on Sunday. Interesting fact, tigers in the wild in India, around 3,000. Tigers in captivity in the U.S., about 7,000.
Interesting.
That's just crazy.
Yeah, it's a lot. Yeah. All right, Mark, thanks so much for the update. And I did see a funny story. It was a survey of which animal you think is the most, you know, able to win a fight. Like, it was animal versus animal in the wild. And I think elephants were kind of on top of the, you know, rhinoceros, hippo, you know, obviously big animals. The part that made me laugh, and this will be a frivolous topic at some point in the future, was which animal you think you could beat? Most people are comfortable they could take a medium-sized dog. Most people are not as comfortable that they could take a larger dog. You know, just, you know, so in the grand scheme of where people think they are in terms of their physical prowess. 753 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Let's see here. Oh, we got Davis Allen with a quick shot of sports.
Zach Walker with the goal. They dropped the puck! They dropped the puck! For the fourth time in franchise history, let's all say together, the Pensacola Ice Flyers are SPHL champions. The President's Cup is back in Pensacola.
And they lost. No, they didn't. The Pensacola Ice Flyers, they won. They swept the Macon Mayhem. They won Friday night at home, which was an awesome start. They needed that because Macon, who finished with a near 900 win percentage, that's a record, by the way, for the SPHL, well, they went into Macon, and they won game two, a clean sweep of the series. And there you are, as you just heard, for the fourth time in franchise history, SPHL champions. Congratulations to the Pensacola Ice Flyers. It was already a challenging season due to COVID. They only played, what, four other teams in the league because many of them could not field a team. Well, they played, and they are champions. So congratulations.
I still think it's amazing they beat Macon, who was like 32-6 in the regular season. The Ice Flyers are 18-18, and they swept them.
They swept.
Game here, game there, done. We're done. We're done. It's all over.
That's why, you know what, the regular season and the postseason are two different seasons. Something can happen once you get to the postseason, if you can get there. Baseball news, the Pensacola Blue Wahoos didn't quite fare as well. They won Friday night, but then dropped the next two. They'll take a day off today, and then they'll be back on Tuesday at home against the Rocket City Trash Pandas. Yes! Finally, we get to see this team play. Also, Basketball Hall of Fame, Kobe Bryant, on a rather somber occasion. He was formally inducted into the Hall of Fame over the weekend. One of his daughters actually wearing his Hall of Fame jacket as part of the ceremonies. And they also announced the next class for 2021, which will include Ben Wallace, Chris Webber, Paul Pierce, and Chris Bosh. Also, Bill Russell, who is already a Hall of Famer, will be getting in, but this time as a coach. He'll be joining, and Villanova's head coach Jay Wright will also be inducted into the Naismith Memorial Hall of Fame. I'm Dave Sound with a quick shot of sports.
We haven't talked about the horse racing.
Oh, that's...
Rams the lead from Medina Spirit, and they're stride for stride, and they're into the stretch. Medina Spirit fights on the outside. Midnight Bourbon. Rumbauer is rolling up to them, coming by the eighth pole. It is now Rumbauer storming to the front, taking over from Midnight Bourbon. Medina Spirit has dropped back. Keep me in mind is fourth. Rumbauer and Flavian Pratt win the Preakness.
There you go. Coming from nowhere. Medina Spirit was one, and Midnight Bourbon was two, and then Medina Spirit fell all the way to the third, and Midnight Bourbon fell to second, and then I don't know. Remember, took it all.
Yeah, Rumbauer coming in with a big
win. Rumbauer, is that how you say it?
Rumbauer. Okay, that's how I've been saying it.
I don't know.
I've been
11
saying
to 1,
that's
though.
That's how it's spelled.
Nice payoff.
Put $100 down. There you go. You're happy. I'm real, real happy. It was less than 2 minutes, though. That's why I keep forgetting about it. Because I tuned in just for the race and then moved on. And no, I had no money on it, so it didn't have that impact for me.
Hey,
Andrew McKay here from the Pensacola Morning News. And May 25th at O'Reilly's downtown on Palafox, I want you to join me and a couple of my friends for News Radio's third annual Headliners and Hops. I'll have a panel of guests, and we'll be talking about important local issues like government, economics, entertainment, sports, whatever's important to you, we'll be talking about it, along with a cold beer and good food. So join us for Headliners and Hops Tuesday, May 25th at O'Reilly's downtown on Palafox.
So I don't know if you saw this, but PPD put up a post about Mother's Day after the fact that had nothing to do with Mother's Day, except that one of their off-duty officers, Officer Anthony Giorgio, who is also the SRO, School Resource Officer at PHS, he was out at Johnson Beach and with his family, and some kids get caught in a rip. Four kids get caught in a rip current. He and another guy, Coast Guard boatswain's mate Reese Baxter, went out and started rescuing them. People tried to do a human chain, couldn't get far enough out. So they got out, rescued them, brought them back, got out, rescued them, brought them back. One of the guys who was helping rescue them got in trouble. He got them back to yard, to shore safely. Unbelievably heroic action. Also unbelievably risky. People die doing this kind of stuff. But, man, that's your PPD. That's your Coast Guard, even when they're off duty.